Raj Sasmal Road was once a magnificent four-lane thoroughfare, leading from the centre of Calcutta to the country estates of the rich and famous in the southern suburb of Tollygunj. Today, after a morning of heavy downpours, it's a mess of mud, tramway tracks and rotting vegetables, down which a ragtag army of wheezing trucks, private cars, motorbikes and rickshaws wend their various ways at 5 miles an hour. At the end of the highway, one hesitates to call it a road, is the brand new metro terminus. On its right, behind brick walls, 160 acres of well-manicured golf courses and riding trails belonging to the Tollygunj Club. On the left, the ramshackle Tollygunj Film Studios, where the great Bengali filmmaker Satyajit Ray is finishing his latest film. And just beyond that, down a narrow, muddy lane, a pair of rusting wrought iron gates set in a high brick wall. A young man in undershirt and loincloth pulls the gates slowly open to reveal a small, overgrown park. In the centre, a pond, surrounded by four mock Tudor houses. Down a red brick path waddling towards us, a flock of large and aggressive geese. A small, round woman in a fine blue sari strides down the path to meet us. My guide, Preeti Roy, introduces us.
Right. Mrs. Dutta. She does all the hard work. We give her the inspiration.
History remembers only the young Englishmen who came and made their fortunes exploiting the natural wealth of eastern India. There's almost total silence about the poor working-class men and women who came to escape poverty back in Britain. Many came with nothing and died with nothing. So in the 1840s, the British set up almshouses for these destitute colonialists. The buildings in the park housed British army officers during the First World War. But since 1947, they've been the site of the Tollygunj Old Age Home.
The GIs or whatever. These were the barracks. And then the almshouse took them over for the Anglo-Indians. The Eurasians of mixed marriages.
They were always the people who ended up at the bottom of the pile, weren't they?
Absolutely. Not all. The ones who got away to America, Canada, Australia, England, of course, were the luckier ones. The ones who didn't want to work, and some of them here were rejected by their children. We have
the young. The young Eurasians left.
Feel that, just as you feel in Shakespeare, or Goethe, or Dante, these other writers who seem to sum up their language and their culture.
This is Morning Edition. I'm Bob Edwards. Neeraj Chaudhry has been called the greatest living writer of English prose. His work has generated critical acclaim in Britain and political scandal in India, his homeland. Chaudhry's second volume of memoirs was published this month. The book is called Thy Hand, Great Anarch, and it tells Chaudhry's history and the history of the Indian independence movement between 1921 and 1952. Julian Crandall Hollick visited Chaudhry at his home in Oxford, England, and he has this report.
On his wedding night in 1932, Neeraj Chaudhry lay down beside his bride. The marriage had been arranged, so Chaudhry and his new wife were complete strangers to one another. Chaudhry had only one thing on his mind.
So very hesitantly, I asked her, have you heard any European music? She nodded, and I felt a little discouraged. Have you heard the name of a man called Beethoven? She again nodded to say yes. Not quite satisfied with that, I asked her, can you spell it? And she spelled it absolutely correctly. I felt very reassured, perhaps Now I shall be able to do something with her.
But for a very long time, it seemed that Nirav Chaudhary would never be able to do anything with his own life. He was born in 1897 in a small village in what is now Bangladesh. He failed at university, resigned the only secure job he ever held, and has spent most of his life striving to live up to his ideal of an English literary gentleman, even if that meant many years of extreme poverty.
Even in my worst days, I would not wear anything. This, you see, my silk tunic and my 22-carat gold buttons, I did that. Because I knew if I gave that up, I'd also lose my self-respect. So I always used to tell people after I came through all that, whenever you see me in rather ragged clothes or carelessly dressed, you may assume that I'm doing well in the worldly way. But when you see me very well dressed up, you can always assume that I am broke.
Chaudhary found some regular employment as private secretary to one of the leaders of India's nationalist movement, struggling for independence from Britain. He became a commentator on All India Radio during the war, but lost that job soon after independence in 1947. 50 years old, unemployed and broke, he finally decided to write a great literary work. The book, published in London in 1951, was Autobiography of an Unknown Indian. In other words, the life of Nirav Chaudhary. It was a literary sensation in Britain and the United States. In India, reactions were very mixed. Some, including the novelist Anita Desai, welcomed the book.
It was a revelation in the same way that the first Satyajit Ray films were. For the first time we saw that material which seemed to belong to my father's world and to our past turned into a kind of art, and I'd never seen that done before.
But the Indian elites hated Chaudhary's book because in it he dared criticize the nationalist movement, which had just brought India to independence. To rub it in, Chaudhary had dedicated the book to the memory of the British Empire in India, because, in his own words, all that was good and living within us was made and shaped and guided by British rule.
British Empire as empire was the best empire seen in the world after the Roman Empire, with great faults, but even greater virtues.
Do you regret its passing?
I'm a complete determinist now. So I don't regret anything. I am reconciled to it. I say, look here, it had to happen, whatever my personal suffering. But that its passing was a tragedy for India. Nobody can doubt.
But Chaudhary's love and respect for England as a culture has never meant unconditional admiration for the British themselves.
Two are utterly different, the institution and the human element. And human element, when it did not come into contact with us, was perfectly decent and had a sense of their obligation to India, what they have to do in India. As soon as they came in contact with Indians, the worst side of their character was always shown.
A British critic once affectionately described Nirav Chaudhary as having the vanity of a peacock and the malice of a monkey.
When the vanity of a peacock and the malice of a monkey is combined with the divine gift of expression, you have an ideal man, literary man.
Does that description fit you?
No. I have no malice in my writing. There's not one bit of malice. There is anger. I have anger for the simple reason I feel most of my countrymen have betrayed their country.
Why do you think most of your countrymen have betrayed India?
They are, first of all, unfit to govern themselves efficiently. Every man cannot do everything. So they have no political capacity. What I mean, India has never been efficiently governed except by foreigners. The Aryan first, the Muslim second, the English first. And now what a mess they are making of governing India.
Chaudhary had great hopes that the United States would come to India's rescue.
I thought Americans would go over and rule us. Now that hope is gone today, so I'm hopeless about the future of India. Only hope was someone with a sense of duty towards mankind would take us over. But unfortunately, no nation in the world today has any sense of duty towards mankind.
Indians today have a love-hate relationship with Chaudhary. They bask in the reflected glow of his fame abroad and tear him to pieces in public within India. The second volume of his memoirs, published this month, has only heightened their schizophrenia. In the book, Chaudhry settles scores with no less an institution than Mahatma Gandhi himself.
Both saint and charlatan. All Hindu holy men are half charlatans, like Hitler. Hitler had an extraordinary capacity to move the masses, so Hindu holy men always developed it to a greater or lesser extent. And Gandhi was only a Hindu holy man in that. Therefore, if he was a charlatan, I was not surprised. He was bound to be one.
Chaudhry is also highly critical of the nationalist movement and Gandhi's role as its moral leader.
He gave a moral validity to the absolutely retrograde xenophobia which the Indian people had. That is what was wrong with him, and he himself shared that.
Many Indians say this simply proves that Chaudhry hates India. The novelist Anita Desai disagrees.
I think it's quite the contrary. He's written that book out of love, really, with such passion because there's love behind it. He's a critic of India, certainly, but he's a critic because it hurts him so when India does things which he feels are a fall from the standards he set for India. It's really written out of love.
Neeraj Chaudhry is, in his own words, a striking illustration of the survival of the unfittest. 5 foot nothing in his Indian sandals, he wrote the 1,000 pages of Thy Hand, Great Anak, like all his previous books, stretched out on the carpet in his sitting room, never losing sight of his self-proclaimed vocation to be a witness to the 20th century.
I had my life, conception of my life was not simply survival and money, but doing what I wanted to do. And this, I would not take any credit for it because I was born with that obstinate will to live and do what I want to do.
For National Public Radio, this is Julian Crandall-Hollick reporting.
It's 11 minutes before the hour. This is Morning Edition. I'm Bob Edwards. Floods in Bangladesh killed thousands last fall and left millions homeless. And much of India has been gripped by a terrible drought through the past few years. A major cause of both is deforestation in the Himalayas. India's government has committed itself to massive replanting, but a shortage of funds and corruption have combined to hamper those efforts severely. Now, in the Indian Himalayas, some villagers are taking matters into their own hands. Julian Crandall-Hollick prepared a report.
Aaj Himalay jagega.
Patthar wala bhagega.
Aaj Himalay jagega.
Patthar wala bhagega.
Today's the festival of Bala Sundriya Mata, and the villagers of Tano in the foothills of the Himalayas have a lot to be thankful for. Samsia Singh is one of the village elders.
I'm from this village, and there was a quarry which was working about 7 kilometers ahead from this village. And the quarry people, they used to blast the hills, and the sand was coming down, the stones were coming down. They were destroying the trees. The vegetation was almost finishing, you know.
The villagers met and decided they had to close the quarry. Against them were powerful mining and timber interests who quarried and denuded the Himalayan slopes of much of their once lush cover of trees. The villagers turned for help to Sundarlal Bahugana, a Gandhian activist and environmentalist. Bahugana, a wiry, white-bearded man of 60,